This interview was produced for Red Eye, a 3-hour current affairs program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
One Gary Matai, the winner of the 2004 Nobel Peace Prize. She's not been the most publicized of Nobel Peace Prize winners. Some media even attacked the Nobel Committee for choosing her. Even prominent local environmental organizations said they had no one who could speak to her work on the connection between environmental activism and peace. Philippe Lebillon is a person ready to speak to this issue. He teaches global issues at UBC in the Geography Department and at the Lew Center, and he joins me on the phone from his home in Vancouver. Good morning, Philippe, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good morning, Mr. Bringbeck.
Why does it make sense to you that an environmental activist like one Gary Matai should be awarded the Nobel Peace Prize?
Yeah, well, I think Ms. Matai has been mostly portrayed as a person who planted trees, and why should we give a peace prize to somebody who plants trees? Well, it's because she does much more than just planting trees. She's really about trying to bring development, political progress in a country, Kenya. And I think that's also a recognition of all the kind of grassroots level people who are trying to basically improve the situation in the country, trying to improve the livelihood security of the people, and also make progress towards democracy, towards a more peaceful society, for example, in Kenya, as Angari Matai was working. So I think the recognition for the Nobel Peace Prize goes far beyond simply environmental activism, towards a whole reflection on the kind of ideal world we would like to be in and how to practically move towards that. And she did that by planting trees with millions of women throughout Africa.
Could you tell us a little bit more how she imagined the project of this planting of trees being connected to creating a society where peace as opposed to conflict was predominant?
Yeah, well, Angari Matai was born and grew up in Kenya, and she was fortunate enough to go to basically Europe and the U.S. To learn, and she became part of the elite. But unlike most and the vast majority of the elite, she decided to look back a little bit on her own roots, and rather than trying to look after her own needs, she looked also after the needs of local people in a village and in our community, and figured out that women had to walk a long distance to get fuel wood because there had been lots of deforestation in Kenya, and found that those women were in a bad situation because of that. It was hardship. And also it was for her a way of mobilizing women and empower women through something that looked quite benign to the government, planting trees. And a lot of environmental movements can mobilize people around those kinds of relatively below-the-radar type of issues and actually get them to think about why are they poor, why are they politically marginalized, and trying to change the situation.
On the African continent, let's look at that continent specifically. How has environmental degradation led to conflicts and wars?
Well, there's a lot of a long history. I mean, I think we can basically. I try to look at the political economy aspects of this, and the first resource that was looted from Africa was very often its people. We have to remember that slavery depopulated Africa for a great many years. When we look back at environmental degradation, I think it will probably seem bizarre to many of your audiences, but I think environmental degradation can first and foremost by removing people from the communities through slavery and changing the whole institutions of relations between people and their land. And that led to basically a lot of colonial plantation be set up, mines, etc. And all that was very much portrayed as development and progress in the eyes of the colonialists. But on the ground, it meant that a lot of problems were creating for local communities. And what we've seen is basically, in the media especially, much more the portrayal of Africa as a land that is kind of overpopulated, which is not at all the case. It's actually below the world average. And the environment, in many ways, has been more degraded and transformed, and its relationship with communities, by colonialism in particular. Now, there are, real issues about resource degradation in Africa contemporarily, and I'm glad to speak to you a little bit more about this if you're interested. One of which, for example, would be drought. I mean, people will remember, I hope most people will remember, the terrible drought that occurred in Ethiopia or the droughts that occurred in the Sahel. Many people have linked conflicts in relation to drought. Farmers not being able to cultivate their land, or herders having to move their cows around, and basically leading to a lot of people looking at a very small pool of resources. And having to fight for it. Now, fighting rarely take the form of a full scale war, very fortunately. But you have a lot of tension among some communities just because of the environmental degradation that has been occurring there. Yeah.
In an area like the Sudan in Darfur, there's presented to us in the media as a entirely an ethnic conflict, a cultural conflict between Arab and African communities, both of which are Muslim. Are there environmental factors involved there as well?
Are environmental factors, as I mentioned, herders, for example, throughout a lot of the what we call the Sahelian band, where basically the desert, if you want, meets the savanna and then goes into a kind of more lush tropical forest. That whole area is basically having very different communities living there, having different types of livelihoods. And so people moving their cows or their camel herds, etc., going to areas where around oasis, for example, where people are cultivating. And, people who've done farming in the old days, remember, if you've got your cows going into the field of your neighbor's certainly not going to be very happy with you. Now, that doesn't need to escalate into full-scale war, and the problem of escalation is very often linked to the politicization of identity, and that's where we can link, basically, environmental degradation, the lack of opportunities for different livelihoods, and the kind of ethnic conflicts that we are most often portraying, yes.
Looking at environment and peace, the relationship between them in a positive way, what examples are there, again, in the African context of environmental activism contributing to peaceful resolution of conflicts?
Yeah, well, I mean, Wangari Maathai is a little bit of an example in some way. You have to remember that after independence, Kenyatta was leader of Kenya, and I think he did a very good job, but unfortunately his successor, Arap Moi, was much more of a kind of dictator, and although it was certainly not the worst regime in Africa, there was very extensive corruption, repression, and there was a big question about how the transition would occur politically there. And I think Wangari Maathai, through her environmental work, was able basically to bring people together. Of course, there were many others, and she's certainly not the only one, but bring people together and think about the future, a peaceful future where, the needs of local people would be given priority, and trying to orchestrate a political transition that would be very peaceful. And it was the case. Kenya transition to democracy was very peaceful. A little bit beyond the case of Africa, we can think of the end of the Cold War in Eastern Europe. The many environmental movements there were also very active in promoting a peaceful end to the communist regimes there. But when you look precisely at some cases of environmental degradation and bring peace, well, you can just argue that there are different ways to go about something that make people unhappy and make their life more difficult. One is to go towards the sin of, well, the winner, and the stronger will be on top, and the other one is to look for cooperation. And a lot of environmental problems are leading also to cooperation between people. Lake Victoria, for example, between Uganda, Kenya, all that whole region, Central Great Lakes, there is like fishery depletions, for example. Well, rather than building up navies to protect the fisheries, like we've seen a little bit in Canada with the Cold War, etc., we've seen local authorities and local communities trying to resolve the problem of depletion of fisheries in Lake Victoria through different institutions, the setting up of quotas, etc., so that people better understand the needs and capacities of each other and try to resolve those conflicts like that in a much more positive way. Yeah.
How would you explain the evident low level of awareness, certainly locally, likely across Canada, of the connection between environmental sustainability and peace?
Yeah, well, maybe it's because Canada is such a peaceful country in some ways. We've seen environmental conflicts, the Cloquet Sound, for example. Maybe I mispronounced it badly. But there's been a lot of environmental activism. We've got to remember Greenpeace also started here. There's certainly people who brought about the idea that we had to be sometimes conflictual, and starting a conflict with people responsible for environmental degradation. But at the same time, we're not faced with the prospect of war over water export with the U.S. It's something that people cannot quite realize. Also, there's been very little violence in all the environmental conflicts that we've seen here in Canada. And so it's difficult for me to give you a Canadian perspective. I'm French, so we have maybe more of a sensitivity to that because we had troops deploying in Rwanda before the genocide occurred, and people understood that maybe the environmental dimension there was a bit of a factor, for example.
Is it easier for people in the colonizing countries to understand conflicts, supposedly understand conflicts when they're presented as centuries long ethnic conflicts, as opposed to seeing the more involved factors of environmental degradation due to partly colonialism, due to also the forces of international agencies like the World Bank, etc.?
Yeah, it's possible. I think a lot of the exposure to those conflicts come from media coverage for most of the people, and that's a little bit what we're doing today. Not to decry the Canadian media, because I think they do mostly a good job, but it's true that they've got a little bit less coverage of Africa in particular than what we might expect. So people will identify the environment with much more with like conservation project, a little bit in kind of British imperial legacy of setting up national parks and defending the elephants in Kenya, etc. So that the bad guys are the poachers and the good guys are the guard who are protecting the elephants. But maybe not enough attention is given to local livelihoods in Africa, Latin America, or Asia, and the type of problems that people are facing there when there is not enough fuel wood, when they have lack of access to water, those kinds of things. And the great efforts that local communities are going through in order to, avoid further conflict, because conflicts are very costly. In many of the countries, I've worked in many countries at war, and one thing that I often heard is that the people say that the society, in a way, was kind of too peaceful before the conflict arrived, meaning that they tried basically to avoid conflict at all costs, because they know conflict is very, very costly in terms of the relationship, in terms of political power, in terms of the destruction, the arms race, etc. And so very often those people try to minimize conflict to the maximum extent.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Philippe.
Okay, you're welcome.
Bye-bye. I've been speaking with Philippe Lebillon. He teaches at UBC on global issues in both the Geography Department and also the Lew Center.
Red Eye is produced by an independent media collective and airs on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. You can hear the program from 9 until noon Pacific Time, streaming live at cooperadio.org.